time.
No, it's actually from Atlanta. All right. And we're playing to a really small house tonight, too. So hopefully there's some folks out there in app land listening to the show. I'm Chip Gibson, a tree hugger, and you're listening to Kayak Fishing Radio. It's Thursday night. We're here on Buzzards Row, and we're going to chat about some fishing and fishing that we don't think we're going to get to do because of the weather this weekend. But joining me here, the man with the golden voice, and actually we'll give him, here's your new music, man. This is your... Hey, Greg Becker, Mr. Big Fly Reel with me in the house tonight.
How are you, sir? Good evening. I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
I'm wishing that the weather forecast would have been a little more stable this week.
Yeah, you and me, man. I tell you what, with watching the weather being, you know, 4 days of straight green bars on Windfinder for winds over 25 knots with little dips here and there, and then back and forth, and every 6 hours the forecast changes.
Right.
I know a lot of that wind forecasting is based on the GFS, on the Global Forecasting System model.
Right.
And I know they have challenges with stuff like that, but it really doesn't help when you're trying to do something like, plan a fishing trip.
Yeah. we'd like to have something a little more stable, please. Can we order that? So I just got you into mute. So, yeah. And for those of you who are thinking, what are we talking about? Well, we're in pre-planning, right? Pre-flight planning. We're getting ready to go. We were trying to set up a trip this weekend, go down to Cedar Key and try to bust on some black drum. But we use one program online called windfinder.com, and it's pretty good. There's lots of little stations around that you can access, and gives you a forecast. Of course, when you're about a week out, the forecast is not as accurate as it's going to be. The closer you get in, the more accurate it is. They know where the fronts are and all that kind of stuff. But Windfinder works good. The other one is weather.gov. And if you go to weather.gov, and on the right-hand column of the page, you'll see it looks like some graphs down there. And you can pick that up, and it usually forecasts about a week out, and it'll give you your wind speeds, precipitation forecast, and all of that. And, man, the models were all over the place this week. They were just crazy. So, but you use any other kind of any other forecasting sites? I mean, weather.gov, Windfinder, anything else?
Yeah, some of the stuff I use is a little more on the weather wonk technical side.
Right.
I have access to some of the more advanced modeling, weather modeling stuff, and the backroom discussions at National Weather Service.
Right.
For some of the more severe stuff, but you know, most of them get the weather feeds from the same data, so there aren't too many people in the commercial market out there anyway doing independent forecasting that's based on their own generated data. It's all from the government stuff, so
right.
They're looking at the same model runs, and then you know how they spin it.
I mean, that's a good enough subject to start off the evening with. I mean, you know, weather is, you know, you want to make sure that you got decent winds. And I looked, you know, so I was thinking, well, what would be good winds? You know, what would we go with? And I looked at the climate models over the past years from Cedar Key and I mean, average winds for this time of the year are about 5 to 7 knots of wind. So,
right.
I mean, I'd have gone with that. I'd have gone with anything under 10.
But, yeah, you know, anything occasional 12 gusts are part of the problem that I think we would have had there, and it's something you consider no matter where you go when you're fishing with the wind, is where you can hide. You know, wind can be your friend. It'll push bait and all the micro stuff that attracts bait to one shore or another. It'll change your current flows. If it's blowing with an outgoing tide, it'll give you a real low tide and change the duration of the tide. So there's a lot that goes into it.
Right.
But especially when you're paddling a kayak, one of the big challenges sometimes is just how to get out of the wind.
Yeah.
So you can fish practically, unless you're pedaling a boat. It's a lot more challenging sometimes to keep your position where you want to fish and how you want to fish. So having a place to be able to get on a lee shore, even if nothing else to take a break, is important. And part of the challenge we would have had is Cedar Key kind of sticks out into the Gulf.
Right.
There's really not a whole lot of place to hide. There's not a whole lot of, you know, shore break that you'll get from a land breeze. A sea breeze will just beat you up. North wind or south wind can just zip right up or down the coast and take you where it wants to. So our options were rather limited, especially when we had a few less experienced kayakers going along.
Right.
Who I don't think would have enjoyed the constant battle with the wind.
No, and it just, I mean, it wears you out. I mean, you know, it takes a while before you get comfortable in a boat anyways to know how to get it set up. So if you do have a light breeze, you know, so that you can get a drift and, you know, work a bait along a shoreline or along a oyster bar or something like that, then, you know, if you're not used to putting a stakeout pin in, if you're not used to using a drag anchor and stuff like that, it's just a lot of stuff to add on to a new kayaker, and, you know, the enjoyment just, you know, next thing you know, your fun meter is all the way over on the E.
Right. So, and I know what that would have done to our fun meters. So.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I always say, if there is a question, then there's no question. You just just go on the safe side. So, anyways, in the house tonight, we got a couple of guests in there. Hey, guests, if you guys, if you want to log in using social media login or something, you can join in and type into the chat room. Any kind of Facebook or Twitter account will usually get you into the chat room. Or you're welcome to just hang out and listen. Scuba Stan is joining us from Charleston. Tommy Head Jigs from just around the corner here in the ATL. Welcome aboard. And coming up, we've got registration open. We've had registration open for the Boondoggle, for October's Boondoggle. It's a Columbus Day Boondoggle, 11 to 14 October. We're going to be at Big Lagoon State Park, just between Perdido Key and Pensacola, Florida. We've got a co-host of the Perdido Chamber of Commerce. They've been real gracious enough to invite us in to enjoy their the fishing over there. And from the locals that I've talked to so far, they said that it's really a great spot. Campsites are locked down, so you need to go through our registration. That's yakangler.com/boondoggle. And the folks have been hard at work putting together a nice system to give you all the information you need in one little area. You can get your – it's the admission tickets are free. You got to pay for your campsite, though, and that's all set up in there. I think we've got about, believe it or not, out of, I think it's 74 electric campsites, and, oh, which will be like the electric campsites are an RV and a tent or two tents, maximum two vehicles per campsite, I think. And then we've got kind of a overflow area that's a primitive campsite. There's only 8 primitive sites left, and we've got 18, I believe it's 18 of the electric sites left. And that's just
that,
in.
That's it?
That's it. So, yep, that's
Holy
all that's left.
Smokes.
Yeah, we've got over 150 people already signed up to join us there. And I know the locals are probably, because most of the folks that I know around there live just around the corner. So They had an event there. The Gulf Coast Kayak Fishing Association had an event a couple of weekends ago, and they were expecting over 200 to join them there for that event. So looks
wow.
like it looks like we're going to have a packed house. And that's just the way it's been with the Boondoggle now. You know, big, giant groups of people hanging out and fishing. There's some really interesting stuff. There's actually some interesting stuff there for those of you who are maybe not into the fishing. You know, if you got friends and family that are showing up, we've got the Naval Aviation Museum is just around the corner at NAS Pensacola. I think it's about 3 miles, 4 miles from the campsite. Which is it's open to the public. It's really interesting. That's the home of the Blue Angels, the Navy Demonstration Squadron. We might even see those guys fly around a little bit during the Boondoggle time frame. But there's some really great restaurants and seafood places there. I know a couple of there's some real good docks there fishermen come in with their thing. There's Joe Patty Seafood, American Seafood. You get fresh seafood, right? Been in the Gulf that night, right before they show up. So I'm looking forward to a good time there. And we've got Native Watercraft. Our friend Woody Calloway from Native has graciously offered us a boat to put up for a raffle. And I think we're discussing it with him, but we might see a repeat of the rock paper scissors for a Slayer. So we're going to have they're giving us a Slayer. I'm not sure if it's a 12 or a 14 yet, but I think that showed up on the Kayak Fishing Boondoggle Facebook page. So it's one reason to show up, right? The opportunity to win a free boat. And let's see. That's about it. But in the registration, you get the opportunity to order your meal tickets. I think meals are $16 for the evening. It's like two choices of meats, a vegetarian option. I think it's even going to be a little fancier than we're used to. I don't think we're doing barbecue this time. I think we've got some nice chicken and something else, some roasted potatoes or whatever. Sounds good to me. And then there's also a pre-order for T-shirts, Boondoggle T-shirts, official Boondoggle T-shirts from Red Zone Apparel. They'll be producing those. So you order them, and then Red Zone's going to bring them down to the Boondoggle. So you'll be able to pick them up right there at the Boondoggle. And I think on yakangler.com is an example of what the colors and the logos and stuff. So looking forward to that.
So do you have any ins that might be able to get us a backseat hop in the number 7, or are we pretty much on the ground watching for the Angels?
I think we're just going to be watching. I'm just asking,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, you're a pretty cool dude. I never know who you know. So.
Actually, I think most of the guys I knew now are have already retired, like myself. So, but it's really interesting. I mean, I enjoyed my time there both as a student and when I was an instructor. So they do have some simulators there for a small fee. There's a real cool section for the kids to go in. They do summer camps there now. And they have like some stations for air traffic controllers. They've got flight simulators for the kids. And we're going to be doing a pre-visit, a site visit, here in about 2 weeks. We're going to head over there, myself and Adam and our marketing expert there, Jerry, paddling fan. So we're going to go check it out, and I'm going to make a visit over to the base and see what we can come up with. So it'll be interesting. And if you haven't seen the Naval Aviation Museum, that's pretty awesome. So they have a big atrium. And hanging from the ceiling in the atrium is a diamond formation of 4 Blue Angel painted A4 Skyhawks. So it's very cool. They also have an old Stearman that the senior George Bush flew when he was in flight school. So it's in there in the thing. Just some really cool different airplanes and stuff. All, you know, Navy, Marine Corps aircraft. So lots of fun. I haven't been paying much attention to the... Tommy's in there now. Tommy's got some new pink jigs. The collie has been the... been the recipient of the new Tommy Head Jig pink version. So,
and if I may add, I made the mistake of commenting on how cool they were when Holly posted her request, and I too have been the recipient of two packages of the new. I prefer to look at the color as bubblegum.
Bubblegum.
Bubblegum is the color as opposed to pink, because that has too many other connotations.
Oh, but, okay.
I remember a day back in the day when I had some Zoom flukes in bubblegum color. Mm-hmm. I was fishing with my dad and my brother bass fishing up in a lake where they had a campground in New York. And they had their other stuff out there, couldn't catch anything. And I whipped one of those things out. And let's just say I got a little bit of a razzing until I landed 3 fish over 5 pounds in 3 casts. and then I had to fight for the rest of the bag. So. Bubblegum, also known in some circles as pink, can be a very productive color. So,
I've got some of those big hoagies, you know, just the
Oh, there you go.
And I actually found some 11-aught worm hooks.
And wow.
They're just killer, man. And you rig them up weedless, and you can pitch them like, you know, a mile, because they're nice and heavy and streamlined and all. And oh yeah, and tarpon love them. I mean, they look like needlefish. Tarpon just love them. And those are really the two go-to colors that we were used to. Is the bubblegum or just a white one, you know, just kind of like the fluke, you know, a white fluke or bubblegum. So, but I have some little Mr. Twisters just tiny ones, you know, the specks are crappy are really biting now strong in the little ponds when you can get out when it's not raining, and a little 1-inch curly tail bubblegum Mr. Twister on a little jig head is killer. So good colors. And Tommy Head Jigs, he does them right. Hand pours them and makes sure they're clean. I mean, and he's got a nice finish on them and all. So, good hooks. So.
Yep, and I've got the one of two people who have the new pink pepper color.
The pink pepper.
Pink pepper is the color combo scheme that I had been hoping to throw a bit this weekend, but maybe we'll get out there and get a look at it. So.
Awesome. Okay. So, anyways. Let's say hi to Jim. I know he's in there. He's just listening. What are you doing, Jim?
How's it going, man? You know, living the life.
Living the life?
Looking at the rain. Living the life, brother.
You're up there in the rain right now?
It's sprinkling a little bit. It's coming
down
a little bit, but that's okay.
Like, we got it this morning.
Yeah, like, we got a little bit this morning, too.
It chased me north, you know, up Briar Cliff and over to Clifton, and then came down south again as I went home this afternoon. So,
I did get to fish a little bit yesterday afternoon before the rain, before it started drizzling a little bit. Caught some crappie, some small, large brim on a small bass fly and a bass. So, you know, wasn't a bad hour to kill down at the pond.
Right. Nice.
So, yeah, got to go to Chicago on Sunday. I'm hoping I don't get snowed on.
I know, right? I mean, they were getting snow in Denver here this week. So.
I know. I've got no use for that.
No. No, I don't need. I'm a warm weather sports kind of guy. I don't dig it. Dig the cold weather. So. And they're probably just now getting the pollen up there. So. So a little pollen, a little bit of cold, you know, so, yeah, it's a lot of fun.
I'm not looking forward to that at all.
So
I was waiting to hear about some black drum fishing around the tax holiday. Doesn't sound like it happened, huh?
No. Yeah.
Ha ha, Dick, funny.
Ha ha, funny, yeah. I mean, actually, the first weekend we had planned, it was definitely a bust because, I mean, I think, I don't know if it was Mr. Becker or Haywood that put up a screenshot of the radar, and I mean, it was just a squall line right over Cedar Key, so that wasn't happening. Yeah. And then this week, I don't think there was a stable, I mean, the winds have been forecast for, you know, every point of the compass this week for Cedar Key, and from everything from calm to what I think I saw 32 knots at one point.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can't, and I mean, so you're going to try to take off out of Atlanta on, you know, at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, which means I'm going to sit on 75 for about an hour and a half just getting out of Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
Then to get down there late and get up and, you know, chance waking up to 20 knots of wind in the face or blowing you out to sea and maybe a squall line. Nah, it's just not worth for the weekend. So,
no, that's a long trip for not a whole lot of fishing. And even with a drift stop, there's only so much you can do when you start getting over 15 knots of wind.
Yeah, and I mean, it's – and two, there, the water's muddy as it is. So a little wind and some rain and stuff, and it really messes it up, so – I just didn't think it was worth it. Plus, and so woke up this morning. We had already made the call not to go, and woke up this morning. And it's a good thing because the wife is running 100 degree temperature, so she's all hacking, got the crud. So, but anyways, so no black drum this week. No black drum last week. Next. 2 weeks from now, like I said, we're going to go down and do kind of a site visit at Big Lagoon, meet the folks down there, take a look how we're going to set up the event, and hopefully we'll get to meet Chris Johnson and the guys from the Howe Group and some folks from the Gulf Coast Kayak Fishing Group and folks over at Pensacola Kayak and Sail, and say hello to them and get everybody excited about hosting a boondoggle in October. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You probably missed the Cobia. They probably are already over in Louisiana, so you missed the Cobia run down there, even though it was late, a little late.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm hearing some guys. I saw a couple of Cobia picked up at Panama City this week. So, folks who were brave enough to get offshore.
A buddy of mine works at Half Hitch Tackle down there. He built me a new two-piece rod for my to fish out of my kayak with, a bait casting rod I can put a 400 on. And he said that the cobia season's been real, real weird because of the cool water temps.
Yeah.
So they might be running late.
It could be.
You know?
I have seen some pretty nice pictures of folks on the piers at Panama City, pulling up some nice kings, man. I mean, some
uh-huh.
big kings.
Uh-huh.
Kings are running, so. But
I tell you, when we're over there for the boondoggle, if we're lucky, the big Spanish will be in.
Yeah.
Right off the beach. I'm talking, you know, 2 foot, 2.5 foot long. Not the little 12 or 14 inches, but the big ones you can flay out and cook.
Right.
And grill. You know? We got into some big ones last fall at Panama City toward the end of September. I mean, big. We caught Spanish mackerel bigger than the king mackerel we were catching. We were catching Spanish on dusters with live bait, and they were a couple more bigger than some of the little snake kings we had caught trolling too.
Right.
They're that big. So.
Yeah, the.
That would not.
Now, you're familiar with Big Lagoon Park, right?
A little bit. I'm more familiar with the Panama City area. That's
right.
More my area I spend most of my time in. Panama City down through Apalachicola.
Yeah. Well, the Big Lagoon is it's on the intercoastal. And actually, from the site there where the kayak launch is at Big Lagoon, it's kind of a big it's kind of flat there right before it opens up. It's a little area where it before it opens up for the actual intercoastal. And then on the other side, there was some grass flats over there that I recall. Now, it's been 12 years since I've been down there fishing. So, but then there's kind of a little strip, of land, which is the key. And, I mean, the quickest way to get off the beach would be to just paddle across and then drag your boat across the dunes and launch on the beach on the other side. And you can paddle all the way out and around to Pensacola Inlet. But Pensacola Inlet has a tendency to be a little nasty at times. I mean, it can get some pretty good swells. But there are some real nice jetties from the old Spanish forts that are in the pass. And those tend to hold some pretty big sheepies and some redfish and stuff around there. And then there's some sand areas there that tend to hold some pretty nice flounder. It's at certain times of the year. I'm trying to remember. Around October, yeah, there might be some good flounder in there. And then about 3 miles from the pass is the Massachusetts wreck, which that's still a pretty good paddle. But that's a good wreck, and there's usually some fish holding out there. And, I mean, you'll see kings and some sharks and stuff like that off of that. But just around the beach, I mean, there's some pretty good bars that form up along the beach. And you get pompano in there and stuff, and then you just run up and down the bars off of the beach trolling a little spoon. And when the bonita, now those are a blast, man. I mean, you can catch those out there all the time. And I've seen those where the schools of bonita are half a mile wide and 2 miles long. And the water just tore up with them. So
I know over in Panama City, certain times of the year, you get triggerfish inshore. Do they get triggerfish inshore over on that way too? Or are the triggerfish all off the close shore wrecks?
Now, there might be some triggers in and around, because I have caught some pretty nice grouper in there intercoastal areas. There's some ledges, you know, where they've dredged out, and there's kind of some undercuts and stuff, and the grouper will get up under them. And and around those jetties that are in the pass, I've seen some triggerfish. But if you were to drive around to the Pensacola area, that's going to be a pretty good little drive from Big Lagoon State Park. But there's a couple of reefs, artificial reefs, that are close enough. They're, you know, within a couple of miles of the beach. One of them's called Three Barges, and we've caught trigger there and stuff. And a little number one circle hook is really great for those guys, man. But you need a sharp knife to clean the trigger fish.
Oh, yeah. So it sounded like Chuck had a personal vendetta against all triggerfish that he could catch or put a hook in. I was listening to his show Monday on the podcast.
Yeah. So I had a friend. Well, we used to have horses in the shoer there. I saw his knife one day, and I bought one of them off of him, a horseshoe knife, and it's a sharp little blade, and it's real short, and it's got a little hook on it. And, man, that was the best thing for cutting open triggerfish. And triggerfish make a great grilled sandwich. I mean, and in fact, there used to be a restaurant. I don't know if it's still there, but just out the gate at Big Lagoon, and I think it's a left turn, so towards the key, there used to be a restaurant there called Triggers that served up fresh seafood and stuff there. All the seafood around there is fresh. Plus, there's the Floribama. And I think we'll probably all have to visit one evening. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to getting any fishing done. Like I said, I'm probably going to be upset this weekend because if Haywood gets to feeling any better, that's why he's not with us tonight. But I'm sure he's got a brand new boat, and saw some pictures of him and Mr. Becker fishing last weekend. And I don't know, did you guys catch anything last weekend, Greg?
Yeah, I don't know. Bill had Bill definitely had the big one of the day. Didn't land it, though. He had pitched out a little 3-inch paddle tail on a jig head, and it barely hit the bottom. He said, and it just stopped, and he thought he was hooked on something on the up on the bottom until it started moving off. I got over top of it. He was hooked into a stingray that was about the size of – it was bigger than a Volkswagen hood. I would have had trouble reaching around the two sides with my arms.
Wow.
And I've got – I don't have quite ape hangers, but I've got some pretty long arms. It had to be about a 6 or 7 foot tail. Just an enormous stingray, biggest one I've ever seen. And it towed him around for about 10 minutes until he finally broke cut the line. Chris Funk caught his first snook, which was a good thing to have. And I had a micro slam plus. I caught a 15-inch trout, a 15-inch snook, a 15-inch redfish, and a 15-inch flounder, and a 15-inch ladyfish. And a couple of bigger trout, one about 24, but... So I had the micro slam plus for the day.
That's a micro slam with some trash on the side.
Exactly right. You can spin it any way you want. It was the micro Jacksonville-ish trash slam thing.
Yeah. And you guys were fishing right out there by Simmons?
No, actually we were down a little further. We were down by the Skyway.
Oh, okay.
A little section off there It's a nice spot to go. I mean, it can make it a little bit better in the winter. It's got a lot of potholes and a lot of sand holes.
Right.
A month or so ago, we were there on a low tide, and you couldn't throw a bait in without the fish having a fish fight over it first to see who was going to grab it.
Right.
And as the water's warming up and the tides are shifting a little bit, they're starting to fill in with grass a little bit, so the holes are kind of disappearing. But Chris and Bill did get on one flounder hole. I think they were manufacturing them down there because they kept pulling out, rubber stamp flounder one after the other. So
nice.
Well,
I'm glad
with those as well. Yeah.
And Chris was down just for the weekend there to fish and.
Yep. Well, he was actually down on work, I think, and camped out down here. He fished with us, and then later on that day, he launched further up in Tampa Bay, and I guess caught a 31-inch cobia and actually jumped a small snook on his little white fluke bait. So I guess the boy done all right.
Nice. He's a good fellow there. Met him there at the last boondoggle, and a good guy just from over in Alabama.
Yep.
So. And actually, we didn't know it, and I don't think they had met until through Yak Angler, but Pam Funk is Chris's cousin, I think.
Something like that.
Yeah,
something like
that.
I also related to Bill or something, too, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yep, somehow, so.
Wow. Interesting. So, anyways.
Funny little planet we live on.
It is, and it's just funny and fun in our little plastic boats, right? So I was hoping Tommy would have told us that he's sporting a new craft, but I don't think... he's saying he might even not have a yak yet for the boondoggle. Tommy, it's 6 months out, man. You got plenty of time. You got time to make it down to Panama City and go see Brad at Sunjammers. So, let's see here. We'll play, get some, I don't have that in there. All right. So, other bills. Yeah, I know how that is, man. So I'm excited to see my pop has got a new boat. He's got him a new Ultimate 12 with the propel drive. So, and Tommy says he's interested in the Cuda and the PA-12. That's just a little bit of a spread there, Tommy, between the Cuda and the PA-12. So,
nice.
Yeah. So, but Pop will be doing some rigging and stuff on his new boat, and we're talking about having some little kind of possibility of some workshops at the boondoggle, and so if people are interested in that. I know Tommy had spoke up on the Facebook page the other day saying that he'd be happy to. Do some teach some folks about how to use jig and how to rig a jig. Tommy did some work as fishing. He got into the, you know, fishing some tournaments and stuff, so he's got some experience, and his jigs are certainly worth giving a try. And if he's out there, you might want to go stop by and see him at the Boondoggle. I think, Mr. Becker, you know, we need to find a time where we can get the buggy whips out and you can help me work on my double haul. So
that's kind of what I was hoping was going to happen this weekend. At one point, it looked like the winds on Saturday were going to lay way down.
Yeah, it did.
You know, it was going to go from gale force winds 3 hours before to a period of flat calm to a period of gale force winds 3 hours after.
Right.
But I was hoping during that short interlude that we'd get out to, you know, be able to get out the long rods and toss them a little bit. But.
Yeah. So, but there'll probably be some time for that at the Boondoggle, and I hope we get to fish before then. Good grief, man.
Yeah, that'd be nuts.
Of course, you know, now, what is it, hurricane season will be upon us next month, so.
Yes, it will.
You know, Chip.
Yeah, man.
What you got to do with that buggy whip, you just got to put your conventional, you got to leave it in the truck and take the buggy whip and bear through it. That's what I did for a year, and I got ridiculed and mocked with no mercy for a year. Until I learned how to cast the buggy whip, and then everything changed. But it was a very painful year, the year I said, you know, I'm going to learn how to fly fish, by God. And that's what I did.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it's just been, I'm just really rusty because it was, you know, that's basically what it is when you're on a boat, okay? And it doesn't have to be a kayak, it'd be any boat. But whatever you're going to do, be it fishing with a spinning rod, or if you like a bait caster, you know. I mean, I did not have a thumb that was going to cooperate with a bait caster. And it just was, you know, you can't just have a bait caster and then your favorite spinning rod and go out there and go, oh, I'm going to learn how to use a bait caster. Because the first time you you put a bird's nest in that rascal, you're just going to put it in the rod holder and leave it alone for the rest of the day, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, but, yeah, I mean, so now with a bait caster, I mean, I really don't have a problem if I throw it, if I'm not paying attention, if I get complacent and get a bird's nest in it. I demonstrated to Mr. Becker in Haywood on a trip that we were down there and showed him, yeah, you can throw a bird's nest into it, but I have a pretty good method of getting it out, so it doesn't seem to slow me down much. So, and I've had some pretty good bird's nests.
I was just... And lots of practice, didn't it? So.
It takes a lot of practice, yeah. And then with the fly rod. You know, and the other thing, too, is it's like taking pictures, you know. I mean, it's like, and Bill will be the first one to tell you, if you want to take pictures when you're fishing, you don't need to be fishing. you don't even take a fishing rod with you. You got to take your camera because you won't get it done. So, but, yeah, I know about the fly rod. The fly rod... That's a terrible thing because it's so addictive, you know, once you catch a few fish on a fly rod. And for a while, yeah, you just don't want to put it down, you know? So.
The money I have spent, I could go into my money breakdown, my Excel, the money I have spent in the last 10 years on fly equipment, buying and selling.
I know what you mean.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, and then we figured out there when I was in Pensacola last that if you chummed up enough on some of the shallow reefs, you know, when the snapper were getting nice and thick over the reefs, you get them chummed up to the top and all, and then you could throw a fly rod back there and you could catch 5-10 pound snapper on a fly rod, and that is a hoot. I mean, that is a hoot. So
yeah. Two summers ago, I had a sales guy that I worked with in Canada. Took me. He lives in San Diego. We went out with, what's the little short guy? Conway Bowman. We went out with one of Conway's guides. I met him that morning, and I caught a 6-foot blue shark on my 14 weight and about a 4.5-5 foot mako on my 12 weight.
Right.
The blue shark was kind of boring, but the mako, you know, we did the same thing. We had a chum slick going, and they took about a 12 inch sardine. Put it on a marlin head and drug it up to get the sharks behind a boat. But that was pretty cool. The Mako was cool. The blue shark was boring. But the same principle. Chump, get them up by the surface, you know.
Once you get them up there where they can see the fly, they'll go after it, no problem. In fact, I think our favorite snapper fly was just a big wad of deer head. It just looked like a big chunk of bait, you know, just like a cut-up cigar minnow. It didn't have to have any kind of special. You could take any hook and wrap a bunch of fur around it and throw it out there, or just take a piece of deer hide and stick it on there and throw it out.
Mm-hmm. I tell you, and y'all can agree or disagree, I've tied some flies, and they've been really nicely tied, and everything matches, and, you know, the feathers are the same length on both sides, and it's symmetrical and all that good crap. And then I've tied some flies. I look at them, I go, if I was drinking, I could say I was drunk when I tied this. You know, the feathers don't line up. They're a little twisted. The hackle, you know, different things were not quite right on them. And I'll take those ugly flies that look a little beat up and actually catch more fish with a beat-up fly or one that's not quite right than the one that, this thing, I actually tied a decent fly, and it's a good-looking fly, and then catch squat with it and took one that was off-centered, off-kilter a little bit, feathers not right, and caught a lot of fish with them. So, there's something to that.
That's like the...
Absolutely.
How many times have you seen the pretty principle on bait work, right? Where you're, we're going to take out your wife or your significant other, you know, your girlfriend. It's like, Tommy's like, that's why bubblegum works so well, yeah? And we always say, you know, that the way that the fly or the lure, you know, the color and all that, that's all marketing for the angler. But yeah, I've been shown up many a time by, no, I want you to put this one on my rod because it's pretty.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't catch nothing.
That's right.
And when my 7.5-foot rod with my slammer and all, my wife with the 4-piece travel rod hooks into a big old redfish.
Thanked your ass.
Yes,
she did.
She spanked me all weekend long catching fish, man. She had a great time. So, but she made sure that we were packing that travel rod. She was going to get a drum on that.
So, actually, going back to what Jim was saying about the flies, you know, when I was guiding up in the Northeast, fly fishing guide for trout, sometimes I had a little, and I swear it wasn't mine, it was a little mascara brush that my wife had from an empty mascara thing, and the bristles were actually kind of stiff, and on some caddisfly ties, if they were tied with dubbing instead of like PVC or something else like that, I found the flies would work much better if you made them look a little buggier by running that cleaned off mascara brush up and down the body a few times and pull a couple extra fibers out.
Right.
And guys would say, no, I don't want to do that. But I'll tell you what, you do that a couple times and they hook up 3 or 4 casts in a row. The math is an exercise for the student.
Yep.
Heck yeah, man. You see that all the time. All the time. Something gets kind of tore up and starts swimming just a little off. Something will jump on it. I guess they think it's injured. It's not swimming right. And it sticks out, you know?
Oh, my.
So I was actually. Go ahead.
My first redfish at Mosquito Lagoon, I was fishing with D. Kaminsky there, me and the clone, and I had just finished rigging the clone's rod up, and we're paddling out. It's real foggy morning and everything, and I had, you know, so his stuff was rigged. Now I'm trying to catch up, you know, get my stuff rigged up, get a jig head on there, you know. And about the time I finished tying the jig head on, before I could get back into my tackle box to find a bait, these got some fish moving across in front of us and hollering for us to cast out in front of them. I reached down to the bottom of the boat and no kidding found a half of a paddle tail and just stuck that on the hook and threw it out there and caught, I think it was 32-inch red on that. So it was just... It was under the seat in my kayak. Just reached down, picked it up, hooked it on, and threw it out. It wasn't not this perfect, you know, rig, you know, all straight and pretty and all. We just clump of rubber on a piece of hook and threw it out there.
Uh-huh. I was reading an interview with Bonefish Charlie out of the Bahamas talking about the crazy Charlie he tied, and he was emphatic about don't make it real neat, make it kind of scraggly looking.
Well, yeah, so I mean...
He out of anybody ought to know. He's only been bonefishing for, you know, how many years?
Right. Now, I mean, you know, you go out there, I don't see... There's no two crabs alike. There's no two shrimp alike, and they're always gnarly looking. So, I mean, if you want to tie them pretty so that they're cool looking in the magazine and stuff like that, that's all right. But after you throw them a few times, that's when they get good, right? Get a little seasoning.
That's right. That's right.
All right. Well, I think that's about it. I don't know what it's supposed to rain here this weekend, so I don't think we're getting any fishing done. And let's see. Yep.
Yeah, rain on Saturday.
Yeah. Mr. Becker, are you going to get out in the water this weekend?
I have absolutely no confidence in any weather forecast between now and the end of hurricane season. So I'll say I'd love to, and if the opportunity presents itself, I definitely will. But, you know, they're predicting everything from gale force winds and tornadoes to flat calm and a beautiful 82 degrees. So I really have no clue what we'll be doing this weekend.
That's it. So, all right. Well, I think that's about it for tonight. I appreciate you guys joining me, and we'll wrap it up with yakangler.com/boondoggle. That's where you need to go, and you'll see the registration button there. We've got about 22 electric sites left open, and I think there's about 8 primitive sites left open at Big Lagoon State Park for our Columbus Day Boondoggle, 11 to 14 October. If you're interested in being a sponsor or to display some of your wares, get with Adam or Mark at yakangler.com, and they'll work out the program with you. We've got Native Watercraft already stepped up and is our first platinum sponsor this year, and Woody's going to bring a slayer there, and I don't know if we're going to do the rock, paper, scissors thing again, but that was crazy, man. Over 300 people playing rock, paper, scissors for a kayak. That was a lot of fun, and you won't want to miss that. So you should be having a good time, and I think that's about it. Oh, you know, there was something if you register for the boondoggle and then a couple of days later you realize, man, you know, I would have ordered one of those shirts. Or I think, you know, now I've got, I didn't get the right number of meal tickets or whatever. Just drop a note to yakangler.com over there, and Mark will get it fixed up for you. It's not a big deal. Just give them a holler and they'll adjust it for you. So boondoggle, boondoggle. There you go. And we're going to be headed out and put it to bed again. Jim, thanks for joining us. Hopefully we'll get out and see some fair weather this weekend around the ATL. Mr. Becker, as always, thank you, sir, for backing me up and joining us here on Buzzards Row. And we'll see everybody next.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. No problem, man. And we'll see everybody next time. And we'll do it again starting Monday.
Hello. Oh. I'm Mr. Ray.
No, Bill didn't make it tonight. So. All right. So we'll leave it out.
Atomic batteries to power, turbines to speed.
Roger, ready to move out.
Yeah. Y'all have a good weekend. We'll see you next time. Chuck's going to kick it off on Monday. Make sure you check it out, 8 o'clock. We'll do it again. Jim, Greg, have a great weekend.
You too, brother.
All right, good night.
See you.